Mike, welcome back to the show.
Hi, John. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. What's new in your world? Everything going okay?
Just peachy. Not much to do of late, but actually everything's going well, but I know where you're coming from.
We've had a day and a half to process this. It seems like we've had a half a year to process it, but now that it's official, what has the general reaction been for you guys there at the USGA?
Well, John, you know, we've been actually very focused on this for about a year and a half now. So it has been it's been a process. There's been an ebb and flow to it. But I think, you know, today, so the 22nd of May, you know, one day after the announcement, I think all in all, we're very pleased with how things went. We, you know, as you probably know, we went very quiet for about five and a half months when we made the announcement on November 28, and then we really wanted to sit back and listen, observe, you know, take in the information. And so one of the things we really tried to convey yesterday is here are some of the things we found out about that, you know, that comment period, and really wanted to share that. So that's, you know, not that many people have enough time to read 40 pages of a document, but that really does a wonderful job summarizing everything that we kind of went through in the last few months.
Well, it's interesting. I'm curious, you know, obviously the PGA of America, the PGA Tour came out in opposition to the proposed ban. I would assume, as everyone is, that eventually they'll be on board. But what could have happened in the comment period that could have changed the position of the USGA or altered the position? Because when two of the ruling bodies come out against, you'd think, well, you guys might take a moment of pause there.
Well, John, no, it's a very good question you ask. I think one of the things that, first of all, was unprecedented for us to have a notice and comment period for a playing rule. I mean, in the hundreds of years we've written the rules, we've never had one of these. So the reason we had it was simply because we knew this had been a very divisive issue, controversial issue for decades, and we really did feel that going into this, I mean, I think some of the people forget that we had spent the better part of a year working through this, really, you know, everything from drafting rules language to how we would do it to the timing of it. So all parts, and we, you know, we looked at the participation. We tried to look at the, you know, is it too late to do this? We tried to, most importantly, we tried to look at the future of the game. So when we came out on November 28th, we had, you know, really a position on where we thought we should go. However, we really wanted to use that time period to say, have we missed something? Is there something that we're just, that, you know, whether it's the actual language to the rule or is there something, you know, moving forward that would, that we just, you know, maybe hadn't thought through properly. And I do think one of the things that we saw through this period is that we, you know, we saw obviously the PGA of America, we saw the PGA Tour have concerns, we saw, you know, quite a few individual golfers. But I think when we look back and we say, okay, what did we learn? Well, a few things. First of all, that this was very much an issue that seemed to be a United States issue. The rest of the world seems to be looking at us right now and not quite understanding why this is such a big issue. But having said that, one of the things, even here in the U.S., the golfers that we heard from, even the tour players, a lot of PGA of America members, they seem to be saying the same thing, at least the ones that were opposed to the rule. They were saying, listen, we understand in principle what you're trying to do. We get the fact that you want a golf stroke to be, you know, a free swing where you hold the club, you know, whether it's a drive, chip, putt, bunker shot, recovery shot, that's the way golf's been. But they seem to come back to two things. Either you're just too late to do this, or we're nervous about what this could do in terms of participation and enjoyment. But it was interesting because one of the things that seemed to be, you know, I won't say unanimous because that would be disingenuous, but there was a sense that golfers, even who opposed this, understood conceptually that, okay, we understand you're trying to clarify and define what a stroke should be or shouldn't be. It was just, you know, they had issues in some cases with the timing of it, or the you know, how it could affect us, at least in this country, with participation. So another thing that really came out loud and clear, and certainly on a worldwide basis, is that contrary to what some people are saying, it was, you know, I would say overwhelming sentiment that golf should continue with one set of rules, and that we do need an unbiased rules authority that doesn't have conflicts of interest, that can look at the game for all players. And that was one of the things, we weren't necessarily looking for that information, but that came out loud and clear from around the world and even within the United States, that they did think that, you know, one set of rules was the best thing for the game moving forward. So, you know, I would say those are some of the things we did learn, but I will tell you, John, that, you know, we came into this knowing that there were a lot of people that felt very strongly the other way. And I will tell you, there is genuine empathy that, you know, there are some golfers that, you know, whether it's nerve issues or whether they've anchored for many, many years, that this was one of the most concerning parts of this, is that we feel for those people, and we wanted to try to write this rule as narrowly as we could to just say we don't want to see anchoring a part of the game in the future. However, we want to allow those players that want to stand taller, that might have back problems, or that want to spread their hands apart, or that just don't want to putt conventionally. And so we really did try to look at it from that perspective to say we want to give them other ways to putt. So it was a good, healthy process. We knew it was going to be tough, but when you're in the governance business, so to speak, it's not a popularity contest. It's not, right. You know, the easiest thing, John, to do would have been to just say, you know what, this is going to be too hard, let's just not do it. And that's just not what you can do in your governance. I mean, that's one of the things that I think a lot of your listeners would probably, that drives us crazy about Washington, D.C., is that, you know, there's too many people there thinking about getting reelected instead of saying, what are the tough decisions we've got to make for this country to make it good for future generations? And listen, I'm not suggesting that, you know, this is a game of golf, it's for the fun, and I'm not suggesting that we can make an analogy to what's going on with our federal government, but that's, there is that mindset at the USJ that, you know what, we need to do what we think is the right thing for the game long-term for all golfers, and we know that, you know, sometimes not everybody's going to be in agreement with that.
Well, Mike, for what it's worth, I have a lot more faith in you guys than I do the folks in Washington. Just so you know. And actually, what you do affects me more than what they do most of the time. Certainly has affected this show for quite some time now. What do you say to those folks who say, well, Mike, there's already bifurcation. We already have different sets of rules at different levels, and college kids are using lasers. Players at the professional level, some are using lasers, but as they go, they can't get to the top level. And that's just one of many examples. Right now, there's two sets of rules governing amateurs and professionals in terms of the grooves, and that's something that'll level out eventually. What's the reaction when people say, you know what, Mike, there's already bifurcation?
Well, John, I guess I'd respectfully disagree with the premise, because I really think that, you know, when we allow a local rule or a condition of competition, those are things that are allowed by the rules of golf. So a local rule pertains to the golf course you're playing. Maybe there's something unusual about that golf course. Maybe it's certain weather conditions we've had, or the way a certain, you know, water hazard architecturally sits, or maybe it's a condition of competition saying that, you know, that we're going to have an event and it's only for juniors, or it's going to be this format. But those are things that are allowed by the rules of golf that we think don't really compromise the overall integrity or what the rules are supposed to be. So, you know, for instance, you used laser distance measuring devices. You know, we feel that distance is distance is distance. And in some ways, however you get that distance is okay. So when we allowed that, we viewed that as that's perfectly fine. Yeah, I think that if you ask the PGA Tour, they don't want the use of distance measuring devices. They could use them if they wanted. So our feeling is there that the local rules, the conditions are certainly appropriate. Now, When you get to anchoring, John, you are talking about one of the most fundamental things with the rules of golf, and that's how you can or can't make a stroke. And I think our feeling is to bifurcate that. In other words, to allow a committee, a golf course, a tournament to make that decision, that I think is heading down the road of creating some chaos, because you just don't want to have a situation where one club is doing one thing and another club's doing another thing, or you're having to put that something this fundamental on the shoulders of whether it's the golf professional, the committee there, and what happens if the golf professional changes and you get a new one that feels differently, or, you know, the concept of, well, this event allows you to anchor, but this one doesn't allow. It would create chaos on something very fundamental. And that is making a stroke. I mean, that's about as fundamental as the game itself in terms of, you know, golf's about you put a ball into play at a teeing ground and you see how many strokes it takes you to get it into the hole. And the next thing, we tell you that, you know, you're allowed using one club at a time and you can not have more than 14 in your bag, and that, you know, when you're making a stroke, we're not going to allow you to make it billiard style. You can't push, scrape, spoon it. You can't. You know, now you can't anchor it. And I think those are things that, whether you like it or not, that really is the game of golf. If you want to go out on a golf course and, you know, play to a hole that's 8 inches in diameter, or you want to use 24 clubs, or you want to take mulligans, those things, if you want to do it, fine. But the rules of golf are set up for competitions. That's why we have the rules of golf. But I think for everyday golf, golfers, the vast majority want to play by the spirit of the rules. Even though they may not know all the rules, they want to play by the spirit. And that, and I think ultimately it gets down to, with this one set of rules, the great thing about the game of golf that the other sports simply don't have is that you and I can go out and can play, and we can have a competitive round of golf. And even though our skills are very, very different, we can go out and do that, whether it's from different teeing grounds or with a handicap system. And I think our, you know, our fear would be that if we start to have two sets of rules, well, why not five sets of rules? Not, why not 12 sets of rules? Then all of a sudden, guess what, John? We can't do that. We can't compare ourselves on an equitable basis. So I think this fundamentally, that you know, this concept of, why don't you just create a condition of competition on a very fundamental rule like anchoring, you know, that would be like, well, you know, why didn't a club just allow somebody to putt billiard style when they get on the green? I mean, that's just not, it's just not golf. And that's one of the things we were trying to do with this whole change, is take an issue that's been very controversial, it's been divisive for probably 30 years, and say, once and for all, let's put it to bed and move forward and have closure to this and really define what we think golf should be. So,
what are your concerns now? I mean, obviously, we're going to play with anchoring, and I would imagine there'll be players who anchor right up until the date of January 1st, 2016. And what's interesting to me about that is that on the PGA Tour, with the new wraparound schedule, you're going to be able to anchor your putter for part of the season and not for the other part of the season. I think that's a very, assuming the PGA Tour falls in line. And it'd be unfair for me to ask you about those conversations. I would imagine they're just underway. But you know, do you think we've put it to bed now? And are you concerned about the reaction from golf fans to the players who continue to anchor going forward?
Well, you brought up a couple of things. First of all, on that latter point, absolutely. I mean, I think the things that golfers have got to remember is that the rules are constantly changing. And they, John, they change because we look to the future and say, is there a better way to play the game? Or do we need to clarify an issue? Or has the game changed somewhat that we need to make a rules change? And that's been going on for hundreds of years. And that, you know, our view is you're playing under the set of rules that are in existence when an event is going on. So, right. You know, if somebody happens to win the next three U.S. Opens anchoring, that is perfectly fine. This rule won't go into effect in 2016. there's a long history to people winning, and then, you know, a rules change, and you look back and you say, you know what, if that rule had been in existence, maybe so-and-so wouldn't have won. I mean, you can arguably the greatest accomplishment in all of golf, but Bob Jones winning the Grand Slam in 1930, we can look back on that and say, you know what, Bob Jones was using way more than 14 clubs. Bob Jones was using wedges that had concave faces that are no longer conforming. And, you know, we look back and, you know, nobody puts an asterisk by Bob Jones for that. That's just the rules that he was playing under. So our view is that, you know, until that rules change happens, it's perfectly fine to anchor. We were looking to the future, and we really, you know, with anchoring, felt that this is the right thing for the future of the game. It's not as if it's an emergency that we need to change right now, but we want to clarify the game for the future, and we want to have new golfers coming in and junior golfers understand that we believe fundamentally you should hold the club with two hands and swing it freely away from the body. That's the way golf's been for centuries, and maybe it got away from us. Maybe we should have done this, and in hindsight, I wish we would have done this years ago, but we didn't. But that doesn't mean that moving forward we can't do the right thing and clarify it. So it's been harder doing it now. It would have been a whole lot easier 20 years ago. But again, you know, we can't take the view that, well, once a rule's been in place, you can't ever change it. Because if we did that, we'd never change any rules.
Well, and you know, one of the shows that I do here and always have a blast with are when I ask the listeners what rules they would change. And, of course,
right.
spike marks come up. I'd change the language personally of near as possible in a drop because I don't even know what that means. I would change,
right.
I would change the immovable obstruction where you drop on a cart path, or as Nicholas Kolsarts did, in a bathroom from a hazard. I would take that out of it. I would just move that. What are your concerns going forward? You mentioned slow play. That's a huge one. What are you guys going to be looking at down the road?
Well, John, you're asking great questions because, you know, this anchoring rule was obviously very important. It's been contentious. But in the scheme of things, I don't want to belittle this, but there are bigger issues in the game of golf. And one of the things that we're very, very focused on is looking to the future of the game and saying, what can we do to make the game more enjoyable? How can we deal with the issue of time? Because people seem to have less and less time. So what can we deal with in terms of pace of play? What about the cost of the game? Golf's always been an expensive game relative to other sports. However, there are things we can do to help with that. I'll tell you another thing that your listeners, I would tell you that if you ask somebody at the USGA who is really knowledgeable, the biggest, by far, thing facing the game of golf in the future is water. It is far
yeah.
bigger than the cost of the game. It's bigger than the pace of play. It's bigger than it's something that it could literally shut the game down in certain parts of this country and certain parts of the world in the future. And it's, I think that, and I don't want to be an alarmist, but it's coming faster than even the experts anticipated. It's water's becoming a more, you know, more expensive resource than it once was, and in certain parts you're seeing golf courses that simply can't get as much as they used
right.
to. So, you know, for us now it becomes an education process. It becomes developing more grasses that don't need as much water. It's educating golfers, saying you don't have to have everything green and lush. You don't have to have perfectly manicured roughs. We don't need to be irrigating roughs and mowing them on a regular basis and fertilizing it. Let's get back to, you know, using less resources, because if we don't, the game's, you know, at least in certain parts of the country and world, it's going to be in a real bind.
Mike, before I let you go, and we're talking, of course, to Mike Davis. He's the executive director of the USGA. I know you have an awful lot of championships coming up. The one that I look forward to most every year is the U.S. Open. I haven't been to Marion since 1989 when I played in the U.S. Amateur there. How's Marion coming along? How excited are you to reintroduce that fabulous golf course to the world?
Well, John, I think you nailed it. It is a, you know, it's almost a museum. There's so many great moments in time that have happened at Marion. Architecturally, it's a fabulous golf course. It's only 111 acres, so trying to fit a modern-day Open has certainly had its challenges. But it's, and it's neat. It'll, you know, the scorecard will read under 7,000 yards, and so I think it's going to be dynamic. It's some ways it's going back in time, but it's great. I mean, you think Bob Jones completed the Grand Slam there, and it's 1950. Ben Hogan, you know, only 16 months after this almost near fatal car crash, came back and hit that famous one iron on the 72nd hole to get himself into a playoff and go on to win. And he had that great duel in 1971 with Nicklaus and Trevino in the playoff, and then David Graham playing that near perfect round and round four of 1981. And so to be able to show the world again Marion and this history and with the great architecture and the wicker baskets, and it's a great ebb and flow to the course too, as you know from playing there in 89. It's got a lot of birdie holes, short holes, but then it's got a lot of really long tough holes too. So in some ways it'll be a different U.S. Open too, because there's going to be more birdies made, but there's other holes that they're really going to have to just play incredible shots just to make pars.
Yeah, I was at Pinehurst yesterday, and that's shaping up beautifully already with the hot weather and the Bermuda popping and the wire grass coming in. I'm looking forward to the next two, probably as much as I've looked forward to any stretch you guys have had in a long, long time. Mike, I can't thank you enough. You're gracious to take the time. Enjoy, and I will see you at Marion in a few weeks.
Well, John, thanks for having me on. You do a great job. I love listening to you when I happen to be in the car, and keep up the wonderful work.